Hello, and welcome to episode 44 of the Book Wars Pod. 44, I know, it's so many. I am one of your hosts, Kristen, and I am here with Kate and Chris. I am much less dead this week. What a joy. And this week, we will be discussing chapters 18 through 28 of Chuck Wendig's Aftermath book, which is very exciting, and we really are quite enjoying it, I would say. I know this is me and Kate's first read through, but Chris is revisiting it, and it's we'll talk more about that, I suppose. But before we get to the Star Wars, what are you guys drinking, Kate and Chris?
I'm just drinking green tea because I'm not really feeling drinking tonight because I'm lame.
You're not lame. That's fine. You get to choose.
I mean, to be fair, we are recording this the day before AwesomeCon starts, so we're going to be like,
yeah,
it's going to be beer o'clock all weekend.
I got a pre-cleanse.
Yeah, and you guys kind of have to make sure you don't get con crud because we're all going to be sounding like we're dying for like a week.
Oh my God, you're so right.
I'm not going because planes cost money.
Yeah, I have a big work meeting on Tuesday, so let's hope I don't get sick.
God bless.
Ugh. Yeah, please don't get sick. What are you drinking, Kate?
I have a plethora of beverages right now. I also have some green tea. It is jasmine green tea, as a matter of fact.
Ooh.
But it's really hot, so I can't drink it right now. So right now I am drinking kombucha, and I also have some gin because it's been a time. I am waiting on my last grad school decision, which is probably going to be a rejection. But, you know, if they would just fucking send it to me so I can stop thinking about it, that'd be awesome.
Be really good. I am drinking again because it's still in season, and it's probably, there's a whole, I mean, I've touched on it here, but there's a whole haze craze going on in Portland right now with the hazy IPAs. So I am drinking Ecliptic Phaser Hazy IPA. I don't think I've ever read what's on the can before, but it's that dope ass like black and neon can. It's space beer.
Yes.
It says juicy and unfiltered Phaser Hazy IPA stuns with a lively array of fruity hop notes, which is exactly right. And then I have, and this is a small boy, and I have a tall boy of Rainier.
Yes.
To back this up, if I finish this during the episode, which I always like to have a backup beverage if I don't have multiple to begin with. So
fair.
Wait, I have a stupid question.
Oh, please.
So I don't drink IPAs because they make me yak, but what is a hazy IPA and how is it different from a normal one?
Yeah, so normally normal IPAs are gonna be a little bit more like clear as far as when you pour them into a glass, you can kind of see through them almost. Hazy IPAs is basically just like talking about like the color, and to a certain extent like the mouthfeel. They're a little bit thicker. Sorry, I know mouthfeel is like a disgusting thing, but it's a real term. Yeah, so it has to, I mean, part of it is having to do with the hops, and part of it is a lot of these hazies are unfiltered, so they're not running it through like a fine filter to get so they're kind of leaving some of that like yeast in there and more yeast talk and some of that. So yeah, that's basically what makes it hazy, is just kind of it looks hazy. But okay. The hazy characteristics have been kind of like big and like fruit forward, very like kind of like loud is another word that people would use for them compared to like regular IPAs. They're less like, they definitely have some bitterness to it because it's obviously still an IPA, but the hazy IPAs tend to be like characterized a little bit more as very like fruit forward, kind of like fruit explosion.
Yeah,
okay. So if you've ever had the, oh my God, my brain's still not working, so this is great. Chris, the California brewery that's in San Diego, Ballast Point. There we go. Got it.
You
ever had, yeah, thank you so much. Have you ever had anything that Ballast Point, I mean, I know you don't drink IPAs, but Ballast Point makes like a grapefruit IPA, and then this is kind of like citrusy offshoot of that almost. I would kind of say that Ballast Point is like why the hazy IPA craze has gotten so crazy, but
that's all right.
She belches into the mic drinking her hazy IPA.
No, thank you for that. I feel like she get it. It's like how I don't pull the yeast strings out of my kombucha, and so Chris like always leaves me the bottom part of the bottle because he doesn't want to drink the yeast.
Yeah, because it's fucking gross. I'm the same way with kombucha. It's so funny. Because, like, I drink it, and then I'm like, I can't. It's chunky. I can't drink the chunky kombucha.
Yep.
It grows me the fuck out.
Also, speaking of beverages, Kate, let it be known that I just intentionally did not slurp my tea and, like, almost burnt my, like, lip because it's too hot.
Well, then don't drink it when it's too hot.
I don't understand, but apparently you slurp like a white person.
Apparently.
This is what
we've been told. A third party has confirmed it.
Yeah! Oh my God. Shout out to Space Jess on Twitter.
Hey, Space Jess.
She fucking knows.
You. She does. She was like, he sounds like he slurps like a white person. I was like, I don't know what that means, but...
But probably.
I'm sure he does. I'm sure I also do.
100%. Chris does. So,
okay,
anyway.
now that we're 6 minutes into the podcast and all we've talked about is alcohol as usual and slurping and yeast, our favorite subjects. I think I'm the first one on the outline here, and I think I had said last episode that we would do more Bounty Hunter talk during the wrap up, but I think this is as good a time as ever, especially because we have our little Bounty Hunter interlude in this section that we talked about, and I kind of wanted to just touch on what did we write on, well, Kate wrote it on the outline, but then she said it was my point, so that was very gracious of her. What we want to kind of touch on, at least, like how the nature of bounty hunting has changed during the time of the Empire, because obviously we have a pretty good deal, I would say, of textual and film and TV show, whatever, cartoon, evidence of how bounty hunters operate. And I think they're kind of more, one of the more interesting kind of like categories of being that we see in Star Wars. I mean, absolutely. We see, like, a bunch of different people. Obviously, we have, like, Boba Fett, famously. But then we've also seen a lot of other types of beings. So why don't you go ahead, and it sounds like you have some thoughts, Chris.
I have no thoughts, except that one of my favorite things is that, so long-time listeners will know that I play X-Wing, the miniatures game. And
I knew you were going to bring this up.
Well, and there are, the game started with just two factions of Rebellion versus Empire. But then they expanded into a third faction of scum and villainy. So the bounty hunters are actually their own faction because they are neither Rebellion nor Empire. And they are their own separate thing, which always, like, I feel like it's a stupid point, but I feel like it does, like, illustrate that they are their own grouping that is separate from the kind of dichotomy that we see.
Oh yeah, no,
totally. I don't think that's a stupid point, Chris. I think that's like an important thing, because the first kind of question that we wanted to ask was like, have they always worked for both sides? Like, who do bounty hunters work for?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jabba,
ooh. Fuck you. And of course, I'm the one who always wants to play with the scum and villainy ships because they're the best ones. Anyway, I think one of the first things we can do is kind of draw lines between not only just time periods like in galactic history, but also I think those also delineate different kinds of bounty hunters. So for example, during the Old Republic, we've got Cad Bane, obviously, Aurra Sing. Hondo's a pirate, never mind.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Hondo. But Hondo. Bosk,
yes. And Dengar kind of bridges the two eras. Like, he's definitely, you know, obviously running around during the during the Age of the Empire and the Civil War, and he's one of the ones who shows up.
And Django, of course.
Yes, thank you. Oh my god, yeah, I'm having all the brain farts today, it's fine. But
sorry, Django can get overwhelmed. He loses his head sometimes.
I'm gonna ignore that and move the fuck on. Dengar is the one who, one of the ones who shows up, obviously in the interlude. And then we have, I guess, this new class of bounty hunters. So there's Jas, of course, as you laugh at your own joke, Christopher. And this might be one of my favorite Star Wars names ever, Mercurial Swift.
It's a good name.
Who was a young upstart in the bounty hunting business. So
way to go, Chuck. You did it.
I know, right?
We don't hate this name that much.
Oh my god, stop. Okay, so I guess then if we're following that as a direct line of the evolution of bounty hunters, how I think we can talk then about the characteristics of those specific characters to describe the nature of how this profession has changed over time.
Yeah, I mean we don't have a super clear timeline quite like we do with some other characters or even the Empire or the Republic or, you know, other groupings. But we definitely, I'm pleasantly surprised that X-Wing included its own little hive of scum and villainy class, because I think bounty hunters are, I mean, I said it already, but I think they're definitely one of the more interesting facets of Star Wars. Because Greedo's technically a bounty hunter too, right?
Yes. That's right.
Yeah. So, and we have him entering, straight away, and almost. I mean, the first time we meet Han, we also learn about bounty hunters. And I think, you know, I would assume that that's pretty deliberate. They obviously, make the world go round. I'm sorry, I don't know any names. The guy that they meet in The Last Jedi when they're
DJ?
On...
DJ?
Yes, thank you. Sorry. Jesus. Is he technically a bounty hunter, or is he just some...
No.
Or do we not really know?
Yeah, he's a slicer.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. I think... He gives off very bounty hunter vibes, though, no?
He does. I think they're... here's the other thing that we have on the island is, what is a bounty hunter? And I think there are definitely a lot of different kinds of mercenaries in the Star Wars universe, DJ being one kind, but I think bounty hunters are kind of their own subclass within that. And obviously they do jobs for money, you know, whatever the job may be. But I think in the name, it's kind of the definition of what they do. They search for bounties. So it's kind of you know, when you put up a wanted poster, rebel scum, please bring me their head and I'll give you the most credits. I think mostly how we're defining bounty hunting. Would you agree, Chris? Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you described well kind of the difference between a bounty hunter and a mercenary. I feel like that is kind of the key here. But the mercenary is the scum and villainy X-Wing class of the galaxy, right? They're the people who I guess they do care about politics because it affects them, but they're the ones who are the realists, let's say, the ones who don't believe in good and evil and kind of the dichotomy of these forces.
Don't join.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's interesting. The first thing that kind of comes to mind when we're talking about this is so obviously we have the mercenaries, which are inclusive. You know, it's an inclusive group that has bounty hunters in it. But I think kind of the line maybe for bounty hunters, and please push back if you guys disagree, but I think the line might be willing to commit murder. I think that's literally what it might be.
That's necessarily incorrect.
I don't know that it's incorrect, but I do think it's important.
What bounty hunters though that we've met have been unwilling to commit murder, I guess, is my question.
I'm pretty sure literally none.
Yeah.
Even Sugi, who Jess's aunt, who we meet in the Clone Wars, and Jess says she's always had a soft spot for, you know, lost causes and things like that. even she's just like, yeah, we're setting up and we're protecting these lemur folks against some pirates. And we're probably going to have to murder some pirates and it's going to be fine. I think if by definition the profession of bounty hunting is like grabbing bounties, like you don't necessarily capture these people alive unless you're specifically told to, right? It's honestly easier to just drag in a dead body and collect the credits.
No disintegration. I know, one of my favorite lines. Who doesn't love that?
I think my favorite part of that line is that he just like specifically calls out Boba in front of everybody.
Boba, you fuck, no disintegrations. Like, how are we supposed to pay you?
Bad
how
Boba.
How are we supposed to pay you?
I'm just laughing right now because our hamster for Hamlet was named Boba, and I'm just imagining like yelling at my hamster being like, Boba, you cannot.
It's so real though.
So what you're saying is that Boba Fett peed on the couch.
That is correct.
Duh.
It's canon.
Oh my god. Anyway.
Kate, was there anything else you wanted to add? I know we talked a little bit, but you put specifically like some of these newer bounty hunters and some of the older bounty hunters. And did you have anything else to add about contrasting, comparing them?
Yeah. Just to, you know, bounce all over the place as we do. I think it's interesting because during the Old Republic, obviously these bounty hunters existed, but it mostly seemed like an underground profession. Like, you knew it happened, and, you know, if they did a really, really bad thing, then, you know, you'd send the fucking space police after them or whatever the fuck. Or the Jedi. But other than that, like, who gave a fuck, really? And then it seems like during the Age of the Empire, obviously they were very closely working with the Empire and definitely trying to collect bounties on all these people who were higher up in the rebellion. And then we come to this weird nebulous place that Aftermath takes place in, where the transition of power between the Empire and the New Republic is happening, and everything's changing, not only for the galaxy at large, but for bounty hunters as well. Dengar says to Mercurial Swift that, you know, he always used to run with a group, and Jess says that Sugi also did as well. But Mercurial and Jess are all about being the lone hunter, which I think is really interesting. And I can't figure out at this point where the switch flipped for that to happen. Because even in Empire Strikes Back, when Vader hires all these bounty hunters, like, they all have the same mission. They could work together, theoretically. I don't think they wanted to, necessarily, but they could have, and I think that's where Wendig pulled out that line that Dengar says about working with a group. But I can't really figure out why it's better now to work on your own if you're working for the New Republic anyway, because they've got all the money now.
I mean, I think part of it's just not wanting to split the profits. I think part of it is like a trust thing. I mean, because we have seen bounty hunters, like Boba Fett, for example, in Clone Wars, like, also had his group, like, when he was younger. And we'll see that when we read Dark Disciple as well, just to give a very minor spoiler.
Ventress being emo and bounty hunting across the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly.
God, I love Ventress so much.
I know, I'm so excited.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've seen it. I think it's as much a personality thing as anything else. Like, kind of how, like, Han, like, you know, doesn't want to join at first. Like, and doesn't, like, consider himself part of a larger thing until Return of the Jedi.
Sure. I mean, obviously I'm extrapolating from a very small sample size of two, but no, I'm just wondering if it's a trend that is indicative of what's going on in the galaxy and what is going to happen to the New Republic, or if this is just happens to be a thing I pulled out from my tiny sample size.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends, though. I mean, like, from not that past performance indicates, you know, future, but what we see Cad Bane, I mean, he's not against necessarily working with other beings, but more often than not, we see him working with, like, droids.
That's true.
Like, I don't have to split the bounty with them, but I think Cad Bane, I mean, is a great example just because he's so he's so stinking smart and he relies so much on that. You know, like when he has to break into the Jedi temple. Was it when he had to break into the Jedi temple? I don't remember anything. When yes. he had the droid, like, go in and be like, bitches, I'm here. And everybody was like, what is going on? Yes. And then that's how he basically broke into the Jedi temple. Mm-hmm. you know, that's, I don't know what, you know, that obviously blurs the line, it being a droid. But we also see Cad Bane, you know, employing other people who might have different skills than him. Like, he is smart enough to know, hey, I can't do this specific thing.
Right. So he hires fucking disguised Obi-Wan.
I know. It's so good.
Oh.
I know. If you guys can't tell, I'm about to start, like, I just started rewatching Clones. So this is about to get real clone heavy, as always. I love Clones. So, but I mean, how could you not? It's so good.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I think this is one of those things that we're not going to get answers on unless we get more material. But I love talking about bounty hunters. They're like I said, every time Chris make straps me to a chair and makes me play X-Wing with him, I'm always, if I'm not the ghost and flying as Hera, I am the scum and villainy ship. So
I didn't know you could be the ghost. That's great.
Oh, you sure can. The Ghost is actually really good.
The Ghost is a badass ship in X-Wing.
Fucking good. It should be.
And IRL, but bacon in space.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think, unfortunately, the next point is also mine. God damn it.
Aww.
but, I mean, basically what I wrote on the outline is, Jesus, Admiral Ackbar, this was not a great plan. about, like, him decide, because, you know, we get some of the intel from the Empire, quote-unquote Empire, whatever you want to call it at this point, about, like, there's something going on, we don't know, and Admiral Ackbar is super worried that it's going to be, like, another trap, like, this is too obvious.
A trap, you say?
But so he decides, like, the best thing for them to do is send in, like, a small strike force, which just ends up getting totally fucked up. Just, like, I mean, on the one hand, that's kind of, like, the point of a small strike force is, like, not that those guys are expendable, but, like, you know, that's how they find out that they need to bring in mm-hmm. more ships. But at the same time, like, not a great plan. Like, if you were so worried that something was going on, like, this is what you did, and all those people died except for one.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's gotten like, it's kind of like a sports thing when, like, he's gotten tight, you know, like, they're like, he's gone from being the scrappy underdog who nobody expects to win, and now he's leading, and it's the last 10 minutes of the game, and he's like protecting a lead, and he's just trying to run out the clock, and he's gotten tight, and he's like, all of a sudden, he's afraid and second-guessing himself in a way that he wasn't before, because before he was just playing with house money.
Totally.
That was such a great analogy. I'm so angry.
Okay, let Chris have things once in a while.
No.
Okay, fine. Shannon would tell you to. That's the only reason I said it.
That's because Shannon is a good person, and we all know I'm not, so it's fine.
It's true. It's Midwest versus New York. Bones.
I am Mr. Bones. I am literally Mr. Bones. Oh my god. Anyway, I don't think that it was necessarily a bad plan, except for the problem that Admiral Ackbar is a great strategist, and the way, or rather his reputation is, and the way we see him thinking in the book is he's trying to be, you know, three chess moves ahead of everybody else, but somehow didn't foresee that they would have a fucking turbo laser on the ground. That was weird to me.
Yeah, what the fuck?
That was my only thing. It's like, obviously none of this would have happened with special forces if he had been like, oh, maybe there's a turbo laser.
I mean, in his defense, like, Wedge didn't know necessarily that anything was going on there, but still.
Yeah, but like, if the ship disappears, you don't just, I don't know. And I mean, yeah, like, the ship disappeared and they hit the Star Destroyer, so it wasn't like it got, like, he could have assumed it got horked up by a Star Destroyer, so, like, I feel like the next obvious thing is to assume it was a turbo laser, but maybe that's just me knowing too many Star Wars, because Admiral Akbar sure doesn't know the other Star Wars because he dead now.
R.I.P. Rip in peace, Admiral Akbar. No, but I mean, it's like Hamilton. Like, winning is easy, governing is harder. Like, there, and this is what we're seeing with the interludes on Chandrilla too, right? Like, they are way out of their comfort zone. They being the rebellion and now the New Republic. They're way out of their comfort zone of what they know how to do. Like, they've never been in a position where they're governing before. I mean, Akbar was a bodyguard on Mon Cal, and Mon Mothma does know how to govern. And so she's kind of the one holding everything together by a thread. But everybody else is kind of just like, doesn't know how to not fight a war.
Right. It's kind of, or like, honestly, it's kind of like when Obama got elected and they were like, I thought Obama was going to change everything. And I'm like, no, motherfucker, our government is a giant, like, lump of uselessness. So that's not going to change just because Obama got elected.
It's a goddamn trash fire.
I know.
Like, yeah, but I think that we are mostly touching on my sub point of this, which is what the fuck happened.
Right.
But also, like, this is,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just thought I was just going to be like, do you want to talk about your other point?
Yeah, so my other point, I can't read. So this is more like a question not dissimilar to our bounty hunter question, but I'm like, oh my god, special forces, they're very cool. Like, I'm wondering what other missions that we've seen or not seen that we maybe, that the New Republic kind of used them for, or the Rebellion at the time, whatever. Because I'm like, special forces is badass. I mean, it's like badass in you know, U.S. armed forces. And I'm like, I want to know what else. This is why we need a tactician. Is that right?
Sure.
Tactician on?
Yes.
Sure.
I mean,
yes, we want a military tactician on so we can ask, like, what other shit could they have used special forces for?
Well, to be fair, we have an answer to that question. It's Inferno Squad.
That's fair, but that's the Empire.
No, but I mean, they became special forces for the rebellion once they turned.
That's true. Inferno Squad does exist by this point.
Yeah.
Well, like, maybe not quite by this point, but close.
No, they do, because... Yeah, they do.
Oh, yeah, I guess the Operation Cinder was right after Endor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, this is... The answer is replay Battlefront 2.
Well, and
I know, right?
And Han's commandos on Endor were special forces
too.
Cass Dameron is special forces.
Oh,
okay. I didn't know that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so, yeah. This is from this is information that we get from Shattered Empire, the Marvel comic miniseries.
Okay.
But so if it came out a really long time ago, but like 4 years ago. But if you, this is going to be a little bit spoiler filled for anybody who cares. But we just find out that Cass Dameron is one of, who is Poe Dameron's father, is one of Han Solo's commandos, on Endor.
So switching gears almost completely. Do you want to talk about weird force shit, guys?
Always.
Love a weird force shit.
Okay. So I just wanted to, pull out some crazy stuff that Tashu said during the meeting, and he's the one who is he's the archivist, right, Chris?
The archivist is separate. He's Palpatine's advisor.
My bad.
The archivist is just a fly on the wall.
Okay, great.
This is the dude who's like obsessed with all the dark,
right,
shit.
Yeah, like shows and, up like, in like a fucking like Sith headdress, like shit.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know. I just couldn't remember, like, what his actual job was besides to be creepy.
I keep picturing him as, like, the guy with the weird hood who was obsessed with the art in Rebels.
I actually, when we first saw him before we found out that was not him, I wondered if that was Tashu.
Okay, cool.
That's so exactly I think yeah, I think that is exactly how you should picture him.
Cool.
Great. I'm so smart.
Yay! I mean...
Thank you, Kate.
That's what I say, like... I mean, he was creepy enough. It was fine. He goes, oh my god, poor, like, can I, just an aside, poor Weish being like, the man who cuts me with the knife is back. And I was just like, no.
Oh my god, I know, right? So what bad. A fucking creepo.
Oh my god. Anyway, creepy motherfucker likes to talk about weird force shit. And
torture.
Yes, he does. But
silent torture, apparently.
Yes.
Which was like, I hadn't heard him say anything.
Yes.
He never even asked me any questions.
Not great.
Chris, first of fucks, how dare you? Second of all, get out. take your creaky chair and leave. Anyway, so he said, there's just this little aside he says about how dark side users can basically absorb the energy of other living beings to make themselves more powerful. And I just...
Oh, wasn't this someone's Snoke theory, this?
Yes. So somebody's Snoke theory, because I love talking about stupid Snoke theories, is that after the Last Jedi trailer came out, obviously there's that scene in the throne room where he's torturing Rey. Somebody was like, wait, is he like sucking the force like out of her? Like, is he a force vampire? And then they were like, you know, the only reason he keeps Kylo around is because he's so strong in the force because of that Skywalker blood. And he probably just like eats his like force essence or whatever the hell. And like, we don't technically really know if that's false because he's super dead now. But
we know nothing about Snoke, and it's so frustrating.
It's correct.
As we've already talked about somehow earlier in this book.
Correct. But just going off of that idea, I think we can do a little more theorizing about how Plagueis and Sidious stayed alive for so long. Because obviously when Palpatine is at the opera with Anakin telling him the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise, he says that...
The tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise.
That silence you hear is me quitting the pod.
I was going to say, Kate, we know you're quitting the pod. Can you finish your point, please?
Oh, my God. Chris, I'm not picking up your bag. I'm just going to, like, take your bag from AwesomeCon and not give it to you.
Rude.
Anyway.
This is why the Jedi wouldn't tell you the story.
Oh, my God. Guys.
Okay, keep going. This is a great point. This is a great point.
So tired. Okay. but anyway, he says that Play just knew how to basically, you know, keep things from dying. And I'm kind of wondering if it's because he just, like, fucking, like, sucked, like, the living force essence out of other things. And maybe that's also what Sidious learned how to do. And then just, I don't know, hardcore murder Play just sucks some fucking force essence out of him or whatever. I don't know, because we never really find out why it is that Palpatine lives so goddamn long, because he's obviously been alive for a million billion years. And I'm wondering if this is what the thing is.
So my question for this is a little bit meta, but I'm like, do we not know the answer to this because it's like hotly contested within the story group whether or not that's true? Or do they totally have an answer for it and just they're not telling us yet because it wants to remain thirsty?
Well, you know, you could always ask Pablo.
Pablo, tell me.
I literally have no idea.
No, I know, but that's my theory.
Yeah, I don't know that we have an answer within the canon of how Darth Plagueis's power worked.
Right, but I don't know.
But do we think it's the same as Snoke? That's the question.
I think. Yeah, I don't know
Kate
enough.
Can tell
about
us
Snoke.
What the actual question is, but
I don't think so. I don't think
you don't think it's the same, huh?
Not necessarily, just because, you know, Snoke is not Sith, so we don't really know what he is or where he came from or goddamn anything. So,
do we technically know he's not Sith though?
We do. Yes.
What does that mean? Like, how do we know he's not? Does he say, "I'm not Sith"?
He makes clear in, at least in the Last Jedi novelization, if not elsewhere, that he is not associated with the Sith.
Okay, interesting.
And I do know that, like, the story group has made very clear that, for example, the Knights of Ren are not Sith adherents, and they're, like, they were, I don't know, little followers of Kylo, obviously, but also Snoke, and he didn't, and he probably had some role in shaping their training, and he's... Yeah, they're not. That's not what they do.
Got it. Okay, so we have, like, the evolution of the Sith that still taps into the dark side, but isn't the Sith at all, you know, self-reportedly. And then we have none of that for the Jedi, is what you're telling me.
Well, I would say that it's not necessarily an evolution with the Sith. I think the Sith are the Sith, but these are kind of like, I don't know, free...
I just mean dark side users, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I think they're just kind of, I mean, it's like, they're like Maul, except not by themselves and crazy.
Spider-Maul is my best friend.
Oh my god. Anyway, this is just me spitballing things, but I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, and I know that there was more about the dark side that you wanted to talk about, too.
I do, because I love the weird force shit. So the other interesting thing that Tashu says is that the dark side is pretty much inextricably tied to the Empire, and that kind of, as the Empire becomes the First Order, that remains true, obviously, because we've got Snoke, and we've got Kylo, and we've got the Knights of Ren. So my question is, just doing a little speculation for episode 9, perhaps, or, you know, just about the state of things in general, what does that information tell us about the relationship between Kylo and Hux, with Kylo being a dark side user, and Hux being First Order, but also definitely not a Force user. He's just super military. And then a parallel relationship that we get in the original trilogy, of course, is Vader and Tarkin.
I mean, I think what we're going to see in episode 9 is whether or not they were able to find that balance that Vader and Tarkin found, where, like, Vader and Tarkin had their own domains, where Vader was allowed to go do his own fucking thing and not really care except when he was needed. And then Tarkin got to control all the stuff that he thought mattered, which was, you know, the military-industrial complex. And I think what we haven't seen so far is a sense of that balance from Kylo and Hux, who kind of just both want total control over everything and don't have a desire to divide into their own domains. So it's interesting. They're almost like two, because, like, I feel like the dark side is like selfishness, right? Like, that's like kind of like the point of it. Like, they're almost darker than Darth Vader and Tarkin, because Darth Vader and Tarkin had like, they're like, I only need to have direct control over this thing to be able to have larger control over the whole galaxy. Whereas, like, Hux and Kylo are micromanagers. They want direct control over every single thing.
They want to be supreme leader. Both they do. Of them at the same time.
Well, and I was just going to say, Kate, we end The Last Jedi with Hux calling Kylo the supreme leader. Like, if I feel like if you're not paying attention, you don't even hear that. Like,
mm-hmm. Totally. But,
and that, I think that just reinforces what Chris said about Hux specifically. I mean, and like their conflict kind of, like during the end of the movie is just very, very noteworthy and interesting.
Right. I mean, you can super tell that Hux has absolutely no faith in Kylo's leadership when they're in the fucking, extras AT-AT, and Kylo's being like, just shoot the living crap out of my uncle. And Hux is like, do you think you got him?
Yeah.
Which is the fucking best. It's interesting, though, Chris, that you say that it's almost like they're taking the dark side to the extreme with the First Order, because they're taking the Empire to the extreme with the First
absolutely.
Order. Hardcore, they took Nazism and they went like fucking hardcore on that, as if there were levels of Nazism.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Why is that funny? It's not funny, but
because I'm hilarious.
It is it's poignant.
I know, right? Oh, it hurts so bad. And then, so other questions. Why, but I wonder if part of the reason why Kylo and Hux don't get along is because for probably their entire working relationship, Snoke's been kind of playing them off each other, because that's how he gets them to be most useful. So now what happens when Snoke's not there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Snoke kind of says it himself. Like, you ask why I keep a rabid cur around, because he gets the job done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because he says that to Kylo, and everybody in the theater is like, he's also using you, you dumb fuck. Mm. Like,
I know, right?
I know, but I do love that rabid cur line, because I'm like, oh, it's so sweet and so interesting and so good.
Right.
I also love Snoke yelling at Hux on the bridge. It's just, sorry, as you can tell, I've been watching, you know, we have the Blu-ray and the digital version of TLJ out now. So I think me and everybody else who's a fucking fangirl of it is have been watching The Last Jedi over and over again. So I also loved that piece. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny because it calls him a rabid cur before he's even out of the room. Like, the blast doors have not even closed to the chamber that he sits in. And he's like, yeah, you're a rabid cur, you little fuck. Like, but, and Hux is like, okay, it's fine. Everything's fine.
General Hugs with an H.
Hugs with an H.
Because H exists in Orbesh.
Oh my god. Shut up. Don't make me say it, Chris.
She's quitting the pod.
I am, and Chris can also eat my ass.
Yeah, I was going to say, quitting the pod was not what I thought was going to happen there.
So, Chris, I think you wanted to talk about various planets and oppression and resistance and all that good stuff.
Planets. Yes. No, one thing that just really struck me in our description of Akiva, particularly in this section that we read where kind of the powder keg has been sparked by Temin and Sinjir's video.
Which was hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
So fucking good.
It's smart. It was a smart plan. But it struck me as very similar to Lothal, where you have Ezra Bridger's message at the end of season one of Rebels.
Oh, yeah, and they even have to bust into the comm tower and everything.
Similar because, like, you have this spark of rebellion to use a title from Rebels, and
a call to action, Chris?
A call to action, if you will. But it's interesting because this is a theme that we see a lot in Star Wars of kind of the downtrodden populations rising. You know, even if for non-humans, you think about Endor and you think about the Ewoks rising up against the Stormtroopers.
Yes, the Murder Bears.
Murder Bears, indeed.
Love a good Murder Bear.
But I don't know. I wanted to talk about that a little bit and like this recurring theme that we see in Star Wars. And we're also seeing it, you know, on Coruscant. We're seeing it on all these planets where people are rising up against the Empire. And, you know, this tyranny that we see in the galaxy, is this kind of what we can expect for the First Order?
I mean, it's just this classic theme of Star Wars, this desire for a return to democracy after just total fascist authoritarianism, blah, 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 blah. It's interesting how much Star Wars really, really does push that. Even from these books we get from the Imperial perspective, like there's always that little, at least a little, scene there of I think Chris, you've said it before, but there, you know, that moment of, wait, are we the bad guys?
Are we the baddies?
Yes, correct. Which I think is really interesting. And honestly, it's just horribly, horribly, you know, relevant right now. We just had the March for Our Lives in DC. And it's just, I don't know. It feels like that. I think there's a reason why, a lot of people have been reaching back to Star Wars to like make their protest signs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. And this is, if you can't tell, there was a Kool-Aid man of Quinn into the door interlude that I'm sure edited out. this is the interlude with the slaves is in this one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. On I want to say Sivarcos.
In this section, sorry.
Correcto.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think that's just kind of poignant and pointing to like kind of exactly Kate's, you know, kind of overarching point in this part. It's like Chuck made sure we were thinking about this for sure.
Oh yeah, totally. And honestly, it's what I appreciate about the writing of it is that, you know, it's definitely there and it's definitely like overarching and it's omnipresent, but it also doesn't feel like I'm being like slapped over the head with it, or at least that's how I feel personally. So I don't know, just good writing, Chuck.
Oh, no, it feels very...
No, he's so good.
...in place, right? Like, yeah. it feels like a natural... Like, it doesn't feel like a plot device that the people of Akiva are, like, blowing up. Like, it feels like you can feel the tangible anger that they feel toward this occupation and, like,
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we've seen what Imperial occupation looks like, even on Outer Rim planets, like on Tatooine, where people hate the Empire. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't know. I feel
to
like...
To be fair, people on Tatooine hate everything.
People on I mean, you know, especially sand.
Oh, my God.
It's coarse. It's irritating.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
I didn't pour myself enough gin today.
Apparently not. but no, so I'm really interested to see if in episode 9, when it comes out, if we see kind of this sense of uprising. It'll, you know, very much depend on how long the First Order's been in power, what the time gap is between Last Jedi and episode 9. But it'll be...
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating just because we were talking, I think, a few episodes ago about the ending of The Last Jedi, where they put out a call to their allies and nobody fucking answered. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, are they going to give us a time gap large enough for their allies and the rest of the galaxy to be like, oh, hey, maybe we should do something about this? Or if we're going to see, I guess, them turn that classic Star Wars trope on its head in some manner. But I don't really know how the Resistance / newly reborn rebellion is going to be able to beat the First Order without help. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I somehow wish, I'm somehow hoping it's both. I'm somehow hoping it's not, like, the same people coming, you know, the people that they called. I'm hoping it's not those folks, and I'm hoping it's somehow sometime in the middle where it's like, oh, we know about this rebellion, and we've never joined it before, or something like that. I think that would be badass, but who knows what the fuck's gonna happen.
Totally. It'd be really fascinating for them to drop in just some Easter egg of, like, some Sentress planet being like, oh, JK, abort, abort.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
From the First Order, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. So just for them to defect and be like, we've made a huge mistake.
It'd be awesome if it was, what's it called?
Arcanus.
No, yes, but no. Caster Foe's planet. Where's he from?
Oh, frick.
I don't remember. I'll do a Google. Keep talking.
To the Googles.
No. Arcanus would also be awesome. Although Arcanus is the homeworld of one Armitage Hux.
I know, which would be hilarious.
It would be pretty funny. # favorite son.
I mean, you never know. They could, like, pull, like, a Operation Cinder on them. You never know.
It's true.
You never know.
You never do. But yeah, it'll just be interesting to see... You know, as we're talking about...
Riosa,
thank mm-hmm. you. It'll be interesting to see as we're talking about how the New Republic and Admiral Akbar and Mon Mothma are really struggling with governing for the first time. The First Order is now in the exact same situation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, I mean... And also, now they have not a leadership vacuum, but that shit is not stable, so...
God, it's a hot-ass mess. And, like, they haven't done anything to make it not that.
That is extremely,
like,
correct.
It's like they almost don't care that it's, like, a hot-ass mess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the people at the top sure as fuck don't care, and the people, the underlings are just like, I don't know, just don't fucking murder me with your rage.
Yeah, like the PVs and Captain Kennedys of the fleet have no real power to do anything about it at this stage.
Nope.
Or it'll be interesting to see if they start to rise up. It'll be interesting to see if the First Order crumbles from within.
Ooh, that would be so fucking interesting.
So interesting.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Well, we talked almost nothing about plot, as we often try to do. Things advanced, if anybody was wondering, if anybody thought this was a book review podcast.
I know, right?
So we'll be talking about how the book ends next week, which is very exciting.
Yes.
Because this is very, I mean, I think we wanted to touch on, and we'll touch on this more. I know this was, I think this was Chris's point. It's just, this is very Star Wars. Like, it's not dissimilar to, I think, Bloodline would be a good, there's kind of stuff happening at every juncture. And there's a lot of stuff for us to talk about, but at the same time, we're still kind of waiting until the end because it's Star Wars.
Right, exactly. I like you comparing it to Bloodline, I think, is a really fair comparison. And obviously, those books are, these two, like, Bloodline and Aftermath are very heavily associated for obvious reasons with the sequel trilogy, because they kind of set up the events that happen in the sequel movies, and compare it to something like A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller, which feels like original trilogy, which is, you know, obviously close, you know, pretty close in timeline to that. So, like, it's interesting how so many things can feel like Star Wars and yet be so tonally different.
Totally. And I know Chris wanted to talk more about that just because this was the first kind of, like, new canon. We don't call it new canon anymore, but, you know, whatever the fuck. This was, like, the first new canon book that you read, right?
It wasn't the first, but it was... I'd been kind of, like, eyeing it for a while because it was very well publicized.
What was the first one that you read?
Tarkin.
Oh, interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah, which we have not read yet. I'm looking forward to going back and reading that one.
Yeah.
Because I think I missed a lot in it.
Probably.
Missed a lot of references. Anyway, we'll continue.
No, there are never references in Star Wars books. That's why we totally have an Easter egg segment on our wrap-ups.
Oh, my God. The running list I have for Easter eggs for this book, this whole book is an Easter egg. It's crazy. Anyway.
Yeah,
it's so long, obviously. I'm like, Kate, you put all of them on the fucking outline already. I have nothing to say to you.
We'll just pick from the menu.
Hee-hee.
So I think that's a good place to leave it. We'll obviously talk a lot more about the tone and feel of this book, about some of the plot, as Kristen was saying, next week and the following week when we finish and wrap up, respectively, Aftermath. But I know Kate has a couple announcements for us before we do our wrap up.
I do indeed. So exciting news. It's the day before AwesomeCon, but we are already looking forward to Universal FanCon, which is happening about a month from now at the end of April, and that's going to be going on in Baltimore. And we're excited not only because it's the first year they're doing it. It's the first, con that's dedicated specifically to lifting up underrepresented groups within fandom, which are, of course, the same as underrepresented groups in society. Funny how that works. I am going to be on a panel with Suara Saleh of Beltway Bantha, Space Jess of Rebel Girl, Maya, otherwise known as @SemiRose on Twitter, and dear friend of the pod, @ShanningJoy26. And we are going to be talking about hashtag Star Wars Representation Matters and just discussing how we started that hashtag campaign on Twitter, how successful it's been, why it's important to us, and where we want to go next. And
are you moderating, Kate?
I am, in fact, moderating.
Kate's moderating, so it's going to be fucking lit.
Thank you. So I'll be going on probably the Friday of FanCon. The schedule is out, so you can definitely go in there and add us to your calendar. There's a slight chance, you know, of course, being a month out, that the time or the date could change. But if you stick the little thing on your calendar, it'll probably tell you if the time has changed, and you can definitely make sure to come to it, and it'll be awesome. And speaking of Star Wars Representation Matters, yes, this coming Friday, I can't remember when this episode comes out, that's fine. This coming Friday, the hashtag campaign will be back, and this time we will be doing a special focus on Latinx people, especially Latinas and Latinx femmes, so please be sure to tune in for that. Please share your stories.
That's going to be April 6th.
Thank you. Yes. So definitely tune in, signal boost, retweet, all that good stuff. We always get a good showing. So, you know,
signal boost, retweet, don't be a dick are three pillars.
Correct. If you're a racist hoe, get out.
Get the fuck out.
All right, thank you,
that,
Kate.
I think that might. I was gonna say. I think that might be it, though.
It
Chris,
is.
If you wanna, yeah. If you wanna plug all of our nice people that do nice things for us,
as usual. So as we said before, next week we're gonna be finishing Aftermath, starting with the interlude on Naboo in Theed, through the end of the book. In the meantime, hit us up, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr @BookWarsPod, BookWarsPod@gmail.com. As always, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast and to the Tachi Station Radio Mega Feed on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And if you have the inclination and the ability, donate to the Tachi Station Radio Patreon. It really helps us cover our hosting and production costs. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. Thank you so much for listening to us talk about Aftermath. I'm Chris, and for Kate and Kristen, we'll talk to you next week after AwesomeCon.
Gonna be awesome.
Okay, the hoe is in the nest.
What up, hoe?